Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Gittin Daf Lamed Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the Shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins in the middle of Daf Lamed Tes. Toward the end of the line, you'll see the expression Kisolik Rebbe Chiyobar Yosef. If you prefer, you can count 28 lines down from the top. We continue with the topic that we were discussing in our previous shiur, the issue of the freedom of a slave after the master declared him unknown, was mafkir, his eved. Kisolik Rebbe Chiya bar Yosef, Omar lehai shmeitza, derav kamei derav Yochanan. When Rav Chiya arose to Eretz Yisrael, he said over this teaching of Rav, namely, that one was mafkir, his eved, who declares his servant, unowned, the servant goes free. And when we speak about going free, it means that he becomes a full-fledged Jew, and he's entitled to marry a Jewess. So this teaching was originated by Rav, and it was taught over to Rabbi Yochanan by Rabbi Chiya. Omar Lei. So Rabbi Yochanan, upon hearing this, asks, Omar Rav Hochi, did Rav say thusly? The Gemara reacts to Rabbi Yochanan's question as follows. And he, Rabbi Yochanan himself, didn't say that? In other words, by Rabbi Yochanan having asked, did Rav say that? It sounds as if Rabbi Yochanan doesn't accept such a ruling. So, in response to that, the Gemara says, and Rabbi Yochanan himself doesn't say thusly, Rabbi Yochanan, Hamavkir Avdo, Yetzei L'Cherus, V'tzorach Get Shichur. One who declares his slave unowned, the slave goes free, and he requires receiving a get shichur, a freedom document, a document of freedom, where the master indicates that he's freed his slave. So Rabbi Yochanan himself says that the result of one being mafkir his eved, declaring his eved, his slave, unowned, results in his freedom. So what was Rabbi Yochanan wondering when he responded above, did Rav say that? Hachi ka'omar le. So you have two approaches that they're noted here as Aleph and then next line Beis. One approach is that Rabbi Yochanan was really saying this, Omar Rav kavosi, that Rav says just like me. V'ikar diamri. Another version of the story is lo saimua kame. The teaching of Rav that Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef said over to Rabbi Yochanan was stated without, we'll say, without the end, without the finish. What do we mean by that? So as we go on in the Gemara, we'll appreciate what we mean by the finish. Omar Lei, Rabbi Yochanan said, V'lo Omar Rav Tzorich Get Shichur. Did Rav not say that the slave also needs to receive a freedom document? Rabbi Yochanan l'tamei. Rabbi Yochanan, in requiring the freedom document in addition to the hefker, is consistent with what Rabbi Yochanan has said elsewhere. Diomar ulo om Rabbi Yochanan hamav kiravto yetzei l'cherus v'tzoruch get shichur. That one who declares his slave unowned, the slave goes free. However, there is a freedom document that is also required. Just by way of general background to this point, and it will have relevance to the upcoming Gemara, when we speak about a slave being owned, there are two aspects when a Jew owns an Eved Kenani, a heathen slave. One aspect is the financial aspect. The slave is bound to servitude, to work and produce income, serve in the household of the owner, etc. All the money, financial side to a slave, including the fact that the slave is a possession that lends itself to being bought and sold. There's another aspect, and that's called the isur, the ritual or prohibition aspects that are involved in having the status of a slave. And included in that is that an Eved Kenani is, we can say, he has aspects of Jewishness. He has mitzvos that he's obligated in, just like a woman is obligated in. However, the slave, the Eved Kenani, is not allowed to marry a Jewish woman. Once he's set free, so then, assuming that the freedom is a complete freedom, what establishes a complete freedom? You probably already got a sense of it in this most recent discussion. Namely, the slave is declared unowned, the financial aspect is released, and then there's the other aspect. Do we require a get shichur in order to establish total freedom? So we certainly saw Rabbi Yochanan's opinion as saying that that is required. There are other opinions on that, though. So when we speak about a slave, we talk about a kinyan moman and a kinyan isur. Let's continue now in the Gemara. Gufa, Omar ulo am Rabbi Yochanan, hamafkir avdo yetzi lecherus v'tzorach get shichur. One who declares a slave unowned, he goes free. And according to Rabbi Yochanan, he requires a get shichur in order to, we'll say, complete the freedom and release the slave from the kinyone isur. As we go on in the Gemara, you're going to notice triangles appearing in alternating directions. On the side, we have a mivneh, a structural note, and triangles appear in two different directions. The reason for these is that they represent lahokel al ma'akav amasa matin shel Gemara. This is to make it easier to follow the give and take of the Gemara. For the next 14 lines, there's going to be this situation of a kusha with the triangle point facing up. That will represent a question, inverted triangle, tshuva, a response. So now the Gemara. We raise a question. Esve Rabbi Abba l'ula ula is the opinion that quoted Rabbi Yochanan. So when we spoke before about Rabbi Yochanan, we're also speaking about ula who presented Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Abba raises an objection. Ger shemes v'ubizbizu Yisrael nechosov. Ger is a person who converted to Judaism, and after converting to Judaism, he loses all legal connection with any family that he may have been associated with. He is like a newborn. Let us assume, for the purpose of this discussion, the ger also had no children. After he converted to Judaism, he didn't have any children. So the ger is alone in the world in a strictly a halachic legal family relationship sense. He is totally alone. Now he dies. At the point that the ger dies, his property is now not owned by anybody, and there are no heirs. It is considered unowned. It's considered hefker. And that having taken place, bizbizu yisrael nechosim means Jews came and took over his holdings, his property. Amongst his holdings, voyu bohen avodim, and he had slaves. Ben Gdolim or Ben Kitanim. We're going to be using this house marking to highlight the two types of slaves age-wise. Kitanim are under bar mitzvah. They're under 13 years of age. And Gdolim are those above. I may correct myself. In the markings, we're highlighting just the word Kitanim because there are two opinions regarding the issue of the minor slaves. So the first opinion is the adult and minor slaves, konu atzmon b'nei chorin, they become free. Abba Sholom, g'dolim konu atzmon b'nei chorin, the adult ones acquire themselves, they have the power of acquisition. Ketanim, the minors, they don't have a power of acquisition as a result of their being minors. Anyone who takes possession of them becomes their owner. Now, as far as the freedom aspect is concerned, we saw both opinions, the Tanakhama and Abba Shol, acknowledging that the Gedolim become free. V'chimi kosav get shichru le'elu, who wrote their freedom document. There's no freedom document. So what do we see? We see, unlike Ula's ruling above, that freedom can be attained even without the get shichru. The mere fact that it's hefker, that the slaves have become hefker. Omar Ula responds with a very sharp, acrimonious remark. He says, "Domi hai midrabonon kedelo gamri in shishmaitza." This rabbi appears as someone who has never learned. V'taimomai, why does Ula react like that? In other words, Ula is quite dismayed with the question raised upon him. Why? Omar Rav Nachman, kosovar Ula, avdo deger ki ishto. Ula views the slave of the ger like the wife of the ger. Rashi says, avdo deger ki ishto, klomar ein hefker zeb, doime lehefker mechayim. The hefker achieved with the death of the ger is not the same as hefker declared by an owner of his property. The eved gomar lo lo meisha. The kosav law sefer krisus. The word law appears in the context of divorce. Oy chufsha lo nitan law. That is a pasuk that appears in the concept, in the context of eved, of shivcha, which is has to do with servitude. So in both cases, the word law appears, hilkoch. Therefore, mechayim ein lo takona b'lo get kisha. When there is a declaration of one being unowned while alive, so the eved is treated the same way as a woman. Just like a woman cannot be released without a document, without a divorce document, so too the slave needs to receive a divorce document. Aval hefker shela achar misa. But when it comes to hefker, unowned, the unowned status, as a result of death of owner, just like the wife of the ger becomes free to marry whomever she wants without any need for a divorce document, his slave also does not require a get. So that Rabbi Abba's question was in effect an issue of comparing apples and oranges. Rabbi Ula was talking about a owner who's alive declaring the eved unowned, and Rabbi Abba is raising a question from a case of hefker, of unowned status, from a situation of death of owner. Let's go back to the Gemara. Ula held that avdo de ger ki ishto is like the wife of the ger. Ma ishto mishtalcha b'lo get, just like the wife of a ger, after the husband, the convert, dies, she goes free and is able to marry anyone she wants without the need for a get. She's basically a widow. Af avodov. So to his servants, with the death of the ger, with the death of the convert, mishtalchin below get. They are sent free without a get. So now you're comparing ger to wife. Well, ihachi afilu Yisrael nami. If you're comparing the issue of slaves of a ger, slaves, like we saw in the Rashi, law meisha, we're comparing laws of servitude to laws of marriage. Well, then, even if a Yisrael dies, let his slaves be considered free, and the heirs will not be zochet in inheriting them. So, no, of course, we don't say that. We know that upon the death of a Jew, his children do inherit the father's slaves. But you just said that just like a wife goes free upon the death of the husband without the need for any document, but she goes free. So let's say the slaves of a regular Jew also go free. Response, Omar Kraw, regarding the death of a Jew and slaves that are left, that pasuk is a reference to slaves being bequeathed unto the children of the deceased, just like land is bequeathed to the descendants, to the heirs of the deceased. Question: Ihachi Hamafgir avdoi umeis nami. A person declares his slave unowned. Well, if he's declared unowned, so that means when the person who declared them unowned, that slave is not going to be inherited. And then the owner dies after he declared his slave unowned. Are you going to say the same thing, that there is no need for a get shichur? Alom omar amemar, why then did amemar teach, hamafkir avdo umes, oisai ha'ever ein lo takona. Someone who declared his slave unowned and then the owner died, that Eved has no takona, he has no hope. Why should you say that he has no hope? If we said before that with the death of the owner, there is no longer any need for a document. So here the owner died. Why do you describe the Eved as being left in a lurch, that he has no takona, he has no hope, meaning he won't be able to marry a Jewish woman? Well, why not? If Rabbi Abba's, if Ula's explanations are correct, that you can't compare a situation where the original owner is still alive to a situation where the original owner is dead, why should there be any problem once one is mafkir his Eved? And yet, Amemar says that mafkir avdo umeis, oisev ein lo takona. Let's take a look at Rashi. Umeis, second line from the bottom, lo liboy get shichur lahafkiyar isuro. We should have no requirement of a release, a freedom document to undo his isur restrictions, his ritual restrictions. Toho mislei, the owner is dead, uvonov lo zochu behen me'olam, and the children never were in the picture. It's like the case of the ger, where the children are out of the picture. There are no children in that case. Here the children are out of the picture because the owner had declared the slave unowned. So the Gemara says, Amemar Kashya. Amemar's position can't be resolved with what Ula had explained above. Amemar remains as a difficulty. The Rashi, where we left off, Ein lo takona, kidim eforish lekamon. The Gemara on Daf Mem explains the Kevan Def Kero. Once the owner declares his slave unowned, poka momone mine, any financial connection to the owner is absolved, is released. The isura hu deposh lebaylam aleim, the isur, the ritual restrictions, the ritual bond remains. The chimayas, when the owner dies, ein zu yerushala hirush lebanav. The ritual connection that had remained is not a concept. It's not an institution, an entity that lends itself to inheritance. Hilkoch ein lo mi shiati renu beget. Therefore, as Amemar explained, there's no one that can release him through a document of release. He remains in the lurch, as we said before. But that's Amemar's position, and that we cannot resolve with Ula's explanations that we saw up till now. On the side of the Gemara, we have a mivneh, structural note. Triangles will appear in two different directions. These are in contrast to the triangles before. Hence, you can see they have a colored-in tip. The note says, Shnei piskei halacha hafuchos, two opposite halachic rulings. Im lifsok, should we rule ke'aba shol, b'inyin avodav haktanim shoger shemes, regarding the minor slaves of a ger, of a convert that died. Bow ties will appear. B'shnei hapsokim, Rabbi Zera shoyol she'elas. In both cases, this is a structural note. Rav Zera will be raising a question. Beferusho michlola, did you hear the ruling in an explicit fashion, or is it a ruling derived from something else that was said? This is a kind of Gemara. It appears in numerous places throughout the Shas. where the issue was raised, did you hear something explicitly, or is it something that you concluded, say logically concluded, or through logical extension? You'll ask, well, what difference does it make? The halacha is the halacha, isn't it? The difference is that if you hear something explicit, so we take it at face value. If that's what you heard, that's what you heard. If you, however, say that you didn't hear it explicitly, but rather it's from one thing that the party said, you derive something else, that lends itself to challenge. We'll say reserve the right to say, well, that's how you see things. We can see from that same incident that you're basing your derived conclusion on and reach a different conclusion. So just to review that last point, it's a structural issue. When something is beferush, so we leave it as is. That's what you heard, so that's true. We're not going to challenge that's what you heard explicitly. However, if what you're claiming to be the result is something that you arrived at through derivation, that's something that lends itself to being challenged. Now, before we go on in the Gemara, since the upcoming section is going to take up half of the next Amud from this point on, I think that there's value in taking the what's called the bird's eye Gemara markings approach. First note, we have triangle number one, where Rav Yankiv Bar Idi quotes Rabbi Shulman Levi, ruling that the halacha follows Abba Shol, that in the case of the convert that died leaving minor slaves, the minor slaves are up for grabs, meaning someone else can take over their ownership. They don't acquire themselves. They don't acquire themselves to be their own bosses, i.e. to be free. On Omid Beis, I hope everyone has the scanning capacity to bird's eye view of the daft. You notice the inverted triangle number 2. I hope you do. By the way, if you need to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. The inverted triangle, which we call number 2, has Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba quoting Rabbi Yochanan, saying that the halacha is ein halacha kabashol. You notice we've squiggle underlined there the word ein to make it stand out that this is an opposite ruling. Go back to triangle number 1, the bottom of Lamet of Omid Aleph. Do you notice at the bottom line, Omar Rabbi Zera, Rabbi Yankiv Bar Idi, Rabbi Zera asks Rabbi Yankiv Bar Idi, and on the top line of Omid Beis, he says, "Beferush mi'alocha mi'chlolush mi'alocha." Did you hear that ruling explicitly from Rabbi Shulman Levi that the locha follows Avashol, or is it something that you derived from that which something that which Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi had taught? The markings indicate a long bracketed section. So after the question was raised, if you skip the brackets, you notice Omar Lay, Rabbi Yankov Reedy answers Beferush Shmili. I heard that explicitly. Within the brackets, the Gemara goes over the issue of, well, what would have been the michlola, the possible point stated by Shmuel Levi from which you could have derived what derived that conclusion. The next section, number 2, you have Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba and his ruling that the halacha does not follow Abba Shol. Rabbi Zera asks Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, did you hear that beferush or not? And again, the brackets, you skip them and you see Omar Lay, Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba says, beferush shmili, I heard it explicitly. And again, within the brackets, the Gemara reveals what the michlola would have been, what would have been the basis for an interpreted conclusion as opposed to an explicit conclusion. We go back to the bottom of Lama Tesamad Aleph, 3 lines from the bottom. Omar Rabbi Yankiv Bar Idi, Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Halacha ka Abba Shol. The halacha will be like Abba Shol's ruling, and we saw that above. Use the arrow that you see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, and a quarter of the way up from the bottom you see the corresponding arrow. Abba Shol ruled that in the case of the Ger Shemes, the convert that died leaving slaves, so that even though the adult slaves acquire their themselves, becoming their own bosses, i.e. freed, the minors are up for grabs. Anyone who takes over, who takes them into their into his possession, becomes the new owner of the Avodim Ketanim. So Rabbi Yankiv Varidi rules like that, like Abba Shol. Omar Le Rabbi Zera, the Rabbi Yankiv Varidi. Rabbi Zera asks Rabbi Yankiv, I hear the ruling that you just said, but now we're going to the top of Amud Beis. Beferush Shmi'aloch o Michlola Shmi'aloch. Did you hear that explicitly, or is it Michlola? Is it something derived? Rav Yankiv Bar Iri, in hearing this question, he probably realizes that by suggesting that it might have been something other than explicit, there's some kind of maybe a problem with it. So Rav Yankiv Bar Iri asks Rabbi Zera, my klola, what might be the basis for reaching an interpreted conclusion? A derived conclusion. Now, it's interesting that Rabbi Yankiv Bar Iri is kind of like playing along with Rabbi Zera's questioning. Because at the end of this whole discussion, you see Rabbi Yankiv Bar Iri, when you look at the Gemara after the bracketed section, Rabbi Yankiv Bar Iri says straight out, I heard it explicitly. But he's interested in trying to understand Rabbi Zera, if you're suggesting that there's some way to have reached this conclusion that the halacha is like Abba Shol through something other than an explicit statement on the part of Rabbi Shua Melevi, what other way would one reach such a conclusion? So Rabbi Zera answers him, I'll tell you, if you're asking me about my question, I'll tell you, the Omar Rabbi Shua Melevi, so the following would be in Rabbi Zera's mind the way someone might have reached the conclusion that the halacha follows Abba Shol, but later on we're going to show that Rabbi Zera can challenge that. So as we continue within the bracketed section, Rabbi Zera tells him that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, Omru lifnei Rabbi. A question was asked of Rabbi Yehuda Hanossi. Omar nisyashti miploni avdi ma'o. An owner says regarding his servant, I have nisyashti. Rashi said loshen hefker, an expression of declaring unowned. So he says, I have been nisyayish from so and so, my servant. I've in effect declaring him. I've given up hope on him. I'm declaring him not mine anymore. Omar lohem. Rebbe says, if someone says that, Omer ani, I say, ein lo itakona ela bishtar. There is no solution for enabling him, the slave, to marry a Bas Yisrael unless he receives a freedom document. V'yomar Rebbe Yochanan, my time of the Rebbe, and Rebbe Yochanan offered an explanation, why does Rebbe hold like that? Why is the freedom document so essential? Gomar lo lo me'isha. There's a Gezerah Shava that we alluded to before. We read it in the Rashi on Oman Aleph between the topics of marriage and topics of servitude. Ma Isha Bishtar Af Eved Nami Bishtar. Just like a woman is not released from matrimony other than through a divorce document, so too a slave is not released from his Isur restrictions, from his some marital restrictions, other than through a freedom document. Vikodaikis mina, and you would have inferred from that, since Rebbe is learning from Isha, you would continue the analogy, ki Isha, like a woman. We're saying the slave is like a woman. Actually, before we go further in the Gemara, let's learn Rashi on the first narrow line together. Vikodaikis mina, kevon de Rebbe me Isha yolif, since Rebbe is learning from the case of a woman and matrimony. Lo Iri Rebbe, Ela B'mafkir Eved Godol. Rebbe must have been speaking about someone that declared unowned an adult slave. Sheesh lo Yad Liklois Atzmo. He has the capacity of the power, the legal power of acquiring himself. Just like a woman acquires herself. Umishef Keroi. and once the adult slave is declared unowned, ein lo elov elo isur, avalo mamon. There is no more bond between master and slave of a mamon nature, just isur. Ki ishozu sheget shelo, just like the case of a woman, where the divorce document eino bal afkia mamon sheish lo aleo elo isur. It doesn't come to undo any financial obligations the woman might have toward her husband. All it undoes is the isur, the ritual status. Namely, her status of being a married woman forbidden to others now is released. It's dissolved into being allowed to marry other men. Avol be'evid koton lo ayri Rebbe. Rebbe was not speaking when Rebbe spoke about, as Rabbi Yochanan reported, a comparison between servitude and matrimony. He was talking about servitude of an adult, not a minor. The lav dumi d'ishahu, with regard to a cotton, it's not comparable to a woman. D'iko droro d'mamona ole. There's still a droro d'mamona, we'll say an element of mamon that exists with regard to the minor. In other words, the minor doesn't acquire himself so that the financial aspect still is, we'll say, floating in the air. Ubedidei svirle diyeshlo takona b'shivcha delo kona atzmo behefker. With regard to a minor, Rebbe wouldn't describe him as ein lo takon, he has no solution, because as still having slave status, he can marry a shivcha. He has a marital option. He can marry a bondmaid. So now we go back to the Gemara. V'kodaikis mina keisha. Once Rebbe is presenting through Rabbi Yochanan's interpretation the law me'isha approach, comparing servitude to matrimony. Ma isha isura velomamona, just like in the case of the woman, when her bond is released from the husband, when her bond to her husband is dissolved, it's a the realm of isur, not the realm of mamon. If the woman has some type of financial obligation toward her husband, that remains. Af eved nami, so to the eved concerning whom Rebbe spoke, was that kind of eved which is isura velo mamona. It's where the isur is absolved, is removed, and there's no momon issue. And we say there's no momon issue, it means with regard to an adult slave, he has the power of acquiring himself. So just like in the case of the woman, all that is really referred to in the comparison where we say a shtar is required, the shtar, the document, is required to solve or dissolve, if you wish, the isur bond. It doesn't deal with the momon aspect. There is no momon issue when you're dealing with the woman being divorced. So too, in the case of the slave that's compared to the woman, it's that kind of slave where, it's I should say, in the case of the slave, it's also the isur that is being removed, being dissolved through the document. Nothing to do with the momon. There's no momon issue that remains. And now that's in contrast to the minor. And as a result of that, a distinction is made between the minor and the adult slave. That is exactly what Abba Shaul had said. Well, Rav Yankov Baridi says, "V'im ichlola mayin." And if that would have been the way I reached my conclusion, that we make a distinction between an adult slave and a minor slave as a result of the law me'isha derivation, what's weak about that? Omar Le, Rabbi Zeira's response, I'll tell you what's weak about that. Adarabha, because if you're going to base yourself on that kind of logic, I can argue to the opposite. Dok mino leidoch gisa. Draw inferences in the other direction. Ma isha ben gedola ben ktana. Just like when we speak about a woman being divorced, the divorce applies equally to adult wives that themselves are above 12 years of age, and wives that are minors. One who's married to a minor, that on a Torah level could exist if a father had given over his daughter in marriage to a man, that husband can divorce her. So divorce applies equally to a gedola as well as a ketana. Af eved nami bein gadol bein katan. So too, the same would apply with one who declares his slave unowned. No distinction between gadol and katan. And yet, you, Rav Yankiv Bariri, reported that the halacha shall follow Abba Shol, which does make a distinction between adult and minor. Omar Leis, Rav Yankiv Bariri says, you can relax, don't have to worry about questions, because Beferush Shmieli, I heard an explicit ruling from your Rishu Ben Levi that the halacha shall follow Abba Shol. And I heard it explicitly, and I didn't hear that as a result of a teaching concerning the law meisha comparison, etc., and so forth. So there's no room for asking those questions on what I had heard. Reb Chiya bar Abba Omer Reb Yochanan Ein Halacha k'Abba Shol, and as we explained earlier, this is an opposite ruling. That we do not rule like Abba Shol, and the result of that would be that a ger shemes, a convert who dies, his slaves, whether they be adults or minors, they acquire themselves; they become free. Omar le Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera asks Rabbi Chiya. Did you hear that ruling explicitly, or was it something that was derived? And as we saw earlier, if you skip the bracketed section, you see at the end, Reb Chiya bar Abba answers, Omar Leh, Beferush Shmieli. I heard this explicitly. Now the Gemara goes on in the brackets. We go back to the brackets. My klala, so Reb Chiya here is asking Rabbi Zera, what's the inferred aspect or the basis for an inference? Diomar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Amru Lifnei Rabbi. Now this will sound like a repeat Gemara, and in fact it's quite repeat with a slight different direction, but it's a repeat section. So Rabbi Chiya gets his answer from Rabbi Zera. Diyoma Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Omru Lifnei Rabbi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi reported that a question was raised to Rabbi. Nisya Ashti Miploni Avdi Mahu. An owner declares his slave unowned by saying, I've given up hope on him. I've been given up hope on seeing him ever again. Omar, and what's the law? What results from an owner being mafkir his eved? Omar lehem, Omer ani ein lo takona ela bishtar. The eved has no solution vis-a-vis to whom he can marry, unless he receives a freedom document. V'yomer Reb Yochanan. In my opinion here, Reb Yochanan needs to be emphasized, because Reb Chiya bar Abba was quoting Reb Yochanan above. Reb Yochanan here is explaining Rebbe, my time with the Rebbe. Why is the shtar, the document, so essential? Well, gomar law meisha, because we have a gezeira shava between servitude and matrimony. Ma'isha b'shtar, just like a woman is released from her marital status through a document, af evet nami b'shtar, so too a slave is released from his isur restrictions, his marital restrictions, through a divorce, through a freedom document. V'kodaikis mino, and one would infer from that, ke'isha, just continue your comparison, like a woman, ma isha ben doyla ben tana, just like when we speak about a woman being divorced through a get, she's divorced regardless of her age, whether she's an adult or a minor. So to no distinction made between adult and minor, which would be essentially the basis of concluding that ain halacha kabashol. And Reb Chiya asks, well, if that's how you think I might have derived the ruling, or that's how Reb Yochanan may have derived his ruling, what's weak about that? So Reb Yisrael answers, I'll tell you what's weak about that. Adarabah, to the contrary, if you're saying that the rules that apply to servitude are derived from woman, dok mino lahachkisa, you could have inferred in the other direction, ma isha isura, just like in the case of a woman, we speak about the get, the divorce document, as dealing only with the isur aspects. Velo mamona, it doesn't come to undo any mamon connection. Af evidami, so too with regarding slaves, isura velo mamona. It affects only the realm of isur. It has nothing to do with mamon. Oh, if it has nothing to do with mamon, then there's room for a distinction. In the case of adult slaves, so they have the power to acquire themselves. In the case of minor slaves, they don't have the power to acquire themselves. Oh, and that would be very much like Abba Shoal's ruling. Omar Le, Surab Yichiyo Bar Abba says, have no fear, you can relax. Beferush Shmili. I heard this explicitly from Rabbi Yochanan, that the halacha does not follow Abba Shoal, hence Ger Shemes. Both adult and even minor slaves acquire themselves and are not up for grabs. They become free. Omar Mor. This is a quote from that which we saw above. We have a little arrow to the side of Mor. You can align it with the arrow above to see where this is coming from. Omar Lahem, Rebbe had said, in the case of someone who was Messiahish from his Eved, Omer Ani Ein Lo Takon El Bashar. Rebbe says he has no solution other than through receiving a freedom document. So it's Mashma, it sounds that an Eved cannot be released from servitude even through what we call Pidyon. Pidyon is a money form of redemption. By saying, as Rebbe says, Ein lo takon el bashar, it sounds like the shtar, the document, is the only way for him to achieve his freedom with all that that implies. So that leads us into the topic heading of this sukya. On the side under the nosei we've written, Haim shayach shichru eved, is it possible to discuss the freeing of a slave, gam al yedei kesef, also through money? Let's continue then in the Gemara. Vehotanya, we ask if Rebbe is reported as saying that that only a shtar is capable of releasing him. Vehotanya, Rebbe Oimer, Oimer ani afhu noisin deme atzmo v'yotze b'neishu kemoichro loy. This is a quote from a Tanaic source that we saw in our previous shiur, where a person had declared his property sanctified, and in his property he happened to have slaves. And Rebbe says that if a slave had received money, he could give that money to the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash and thereby go free. So what do you see from here? That there are other means of the slave going free. The Gemara answers, Hachi komar, oy bekesef, oy beshtar. V'hai poka le kaspe. The slave can achieve freedom either through a financial transaction. He can buy himself free if someone had given him money on condition that his owner doesn't have any hand in it. The slave becomes the owner of that money. He can offer the money to, as we saw before, to the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash and thereby buy his freedom. Or through a document. Now, Vahai, there's a reference to a case that Rebbe was addressing before when we saw Nisyashti Miploni Avdi, someone had been Misyayish was Machir, his Eved, so there's no more money aspect. That's, since there's no more money aspect, any money, let's say financial bond, then in order for the slave to achieve his full release, he would need the shtar, need the document. And that's why Rebbe said, in that case, ein lo takon ela b'shtar. So if there is a money payment, fine. If there's no money payment, as is the case of the owner declaring him unowned, so then a shtar would be necessary. Ulafuke mehai tano. And this approach that just suggested that money could be a means of the slave going free, that is to the exclusion of the following Tanaic opinion. We have a framed section, and we'll cheat a little bit. We'll look to the end of the framed section. You notice we've dashed, underlined, V'ein ha-kesef gomer bo, kesef, money does not work like a document. So Rebbe's approach, as we're presenting him now, is to the exclusion of the approach in this source. So now let's read the source. Desanya Rebbe Shimon Omer Mishum Rebbe Akiva. Rebbe Shimon quotes Rebbe Akiva, Yochol Yehei Kesef Gomer Bo Kederech Shishtar Gomer Bo. Could money complete, sever the relationship, the servitude, as a document severs servitude? Talmud Lomar V'hofdei Loi Nevdosa. That's a pasuk. We've included the pasuk on the side of our marked Gemaras. Let's read the pasuk together in Vayikra, Perek Yutes pasuk Chof. It says V'ish ki yishkav es isha shifcha zer v'hi shifcha nechrefes le'ish. We're talking about intimacy between some man and a bondmaid that is nechrefes le'ish, a bondmaid that is reserved to a particular individual. We're not explaining the details right now. V'hofdei lo'i nifdosa, and she hasn't been redeemed, or chufsha lo nitan lo, or her freedom hasn't been given to her, bikoros tia lo yumsu kilo chufasha. There's no death penalty here. She's not viewed as a married woman, and hence the outsider that had intimacy with her is not subject to the capital punishment that is accorded to someone who has intimacy with a married woman. Now, we haven't explained this pasuk. There's quite a bit of detail associated with that pasuk, but what we want to notice is what the Brisa says about this pasuk. It says, and it describes her as V'hofdei lo nifdosa, Oiro kol ha-parsha kula lelo chufasha. The parsha, that section of the Torah, pasuk chof, ends with the expression kilo chufasha. She hasn't received freedom. Lo marloch, this tells us shtar gomer ba, v'ein ha-kesef gomer ba. Only a shtar finishes off her bond of servitude and sets her free, whether it be from freedom from work obligations or freedom from isur restrictions, ritual restrictions. V'ein ha-kesef gomer ba. Kesef, when we speak about a slave buying his freedom, that'll buy his freedom from servitude, but it doesn't release him from the ritual bonds. It doesn't enable a bondmaid who buys her freedom to then be enabled to marry a Jewish man. If some man comes and tries to marry her, the kiddushin, the marriage, will not take hold. As we go on in the Gemara, first of all, we have a topic heading, a subtopic heading, Tat Nosei, Sukya Shopsak Halacha. We have a section of Gemara which deals with halachic rulings. And we've used a double underline marking to highlight the names who take a legal stance on this matter, Rav Nachman and Rav Yochanan. We just saw a Tanaic source of opening up with Rebbe Shimon. That name will be important as far as the continuation of the Gemara. Omar Rebbe Rami Bar Chama and Rebbe Yochanan. Halacha k'Rebbe Shimon. So he rules like Rabbi Shimon, where a distinction is made between the power of a shtar, a freedom document releases a servant totally, versus money paid by the servant, let's say buying his freedom, will release him from servitude, from financial bondage, but not from ritual restrictions. Rabbi Yosef bar Chamor, Rabbi Yochanan, ein halacha k'Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yochanan says the halacha does not follow Rabbi Shimon. Now, if you're going to say the halacha doesn't follow Rabbi Shimon, it would then stand to reason that the halacha would be like Rebbe before, as we explained him, that kesef, freedom achieved through financial redemption, would accomplish the same thing as the receipt of a freedom document. Namely, even ritual bonds are cut. Ashkechei Rav Nachman Yitzchok le Rabo Bar Shilas davekoi apischo debeit filop. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok meets up with Rabbo standing at the entrance of a synagogue. Beit Filo is a Beis HaKnesses, a synagogue. Omar Le Halocha, Oein Halocha. Does the Halocha follow Rebbe Shimon or not? Omar Le, Ani Omer Ein Halocha. I say the Halocha is not like Rebbe Shimon. Rabbonon Diosim Mechuzo, Amri, the Rabbonon that came from the city of Mechuzo, say, Omar Rebbe Zeru Shmei de Rav Nachman, Halocha. And then Rabbi Zeru quotes Rav Nachman saying the halacha does follow Rabbi Shimon. And when I came to Surah, Ashkachte l'Reb Chiya Bar Ovin, I met up with Reb Chiya, Amri Le, Emo Li, Izi Gufa, De Uvdo, Hechi Have. Let's just go over that last line again. V'chi asoi l'surah, and when I came to surah, ashkachte l'Reb Chiya Bar Ovin, I met Reb Chiya Bar Ovin. Amri le, and I asked him, Eimo li, easy, gufa de'uvda hechi have. Would you please tell me, what was the maisa with Rav Nachman, from which it was derived that the halacha is like Rebbe Shimon, that kesef does not accomplish the same thing as a shtar, that the kesef is not gomer ba. Omar li, and he told me, dahi amso dave moro shchiv meira. There was a bondmaid whose owner was in the throes of death. He was deathly ill. Asyo bachyo kamei. The bondmaid came to her master and was crying. Omrole, and she, the bondmaid said, Ad emas tishtabid v'tezol e'itza. How long is she going to continue like this? Referring to herself, she says, how long is she going to be enslaved? Well, the master, upon hearing that, shokal kumse, he took his hat, shoda ba, threw it at the bondmaid, the crying bondmaid, omar la, and he said, zil kini ha ukni nafshech, pick up the hat and acquire the hat, and through your acquiring that, you acquire yourself. Would sound as if she becomes free that way. Asu l'kamei de Rav Nachman. And this story was presented to Rav Nachman. Omar lohu, and Rav Nachman said, lo asa veloi klum. Nothing has been accomplished. Man de choza sovar. One who was present, who saw that, who heard Rav Nachman say, lo asa veloi klum, would figure, mishum da halacha k'Rabbi Shimon. Because halacha follows Rav Shimon. What happened with regard to the master there and the bondmaid was a financial deal. The hat that she would acquire, and with acquiring the hat, she acquires herself, and the halacha follows Rabbi Shimon, that kesef is not gomer. The kesef doesn't complete the transition from servitude to freedom, and it's not effective in allowing her to marry a Yisrael. However, the servitude bond is released. Veloihi. And that is not the real explanation regarding that story involving Rav Nachman. When Rav Nachman said that Lo'osav aluklum, Elo mishum dehave le kelov shel makne, the story with the hat was intended to be a transaction that we know as a kinyan sudar. Kinyan sudar in is commonly known as, we'll say, the handkerchief deal. It's a symbolic gesture, a symbolic kinyan, like money. In other words, when there's an exchange of an article between buyer and seller, so that clinches a deal. Someone pulls out a handkerchief from their pocket and gives it to the other fellow, so the deal is clinched. Who needs to be the owner, according to Rav Nachman? Who needs to be the owner of that, we'll say, symbolic item for accomplishing a kinyan sudar? So according to Rav Nachman, the one that needs to be the owner of it is the one that acquires, the koine. In our story, the bond maid was in that position to be the koine, to acquire herself, to acquire her freedom. The master is the makne. He is the one who is giving over, selling over his share, his holding in her, to the bondmaid, who would be the koine. The deal there with the hat, Rav Nachman said, lo'osav aluklum, isn't a function of holding like Reb Shimon, that kesef eino gomer, but it's because the deal wasn't done properly from the very outset, because that was a case involving Kalev shel makne, was the owner's hat, and you need to have Kalev shel koine, the vessel or the utensil, the item for that symbolic gesture must be an item owned by the one acquiring. In other words, the bondmaid would be giving the owner an item of hers, and upon acquiring that, the owner, in exchange for his receiving an item from her, owned by her, gives to the bondmaid her freedom. And as a result, since it was done incorrectly, nothing was accomplished, not even the severing of the bond of servitude, of mamoin. So as we just go back, we'll scan the Gemara, we saw the Gemara open up saying that the halacha is like Rav Nachman said, the halacha is like Reb Shimon, and we saw Rav Yosef Bar Chama Kohen Rav Yochanan, halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon, and then we had a whole presentation of Rabba Bar Shilas saying, I hold halacha is not like Reb Shimon, and others from the Rabbanan from Lechuzah say, quoting Rabbi Zera, in the name of Rav Nachman, halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, and upon further research, having Rav Nachman say that halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, turns out to be a kind of weak position, because Rav Nachman, coming to the conclusion that Rav Nachman would say that we follow Rabbi Shimon, is really a faulty conclusion, because the story upon which people felt that Rav Nachman holds that halacha is like Rabbi Shimon is really inaccurate. In that particular story where Rav Nachman had said lo'osav aluklum, it wasn't a function of holding like Rabbi Shimon that kesef eino gomer, but because it was a lo'osav aluklum, nothing was accomplished because the vehicle for accomplishing the kinyan suitor was done incorrectly. We continue in the Gemara. Omar of Shmuel bar Achitoi, Omar Rav Hamnuna, Sabo, Omar Rav Yitzchak bar Ashian, Omar Rav Huna, Omar Rav Hamnuna, a lot of names there. Halacha k'Rebbi Shimon. And the Gemara says, Velohi, and that's not so. Ain't halacha k'Rebbi Shimon. Rather, the halacha will not follow Rebbi Shimon. And as we explained, if you say the halacha is not like Rebbi Shimon, so then we're left to conclude that not only does a shtar release the servant from servitude, whether it's a money, whether it's the kinyan mamon and the kinyan iser, but not just a freedom document is capable of doing that, but money is also capable of releasing him from both the Kinyan Momon and the Kinyan Isor. We see a new marking as we continue in the Gemara. Notice, of course, there's a slash which indicates that there's a new trend of thought. The house marking, also noted with an aleph and a following a beis, is featured on the side by under the Nosei slash Mivneh. The house highlights Shnei Dugmos, two examples, Shel Pe'ula, Sheim Ho'eved, Ason, Bifnei Rabo, Simen Shiyotsu L'Cherus. Two actions that if a slave does these in front of his master, the slave goes free. It's an indicative that the slave has been freed. The dashed underlining, you'll notice, highlights the expression Bifnei Rabo, done in front of his master. In Gemara markings, we often recommend taking the bird's eye view of the sugya before getting into the text. So you notice here at the bottom line, the Eved is highlighted, the case of a slave doing something, and that's the Aleph case. And on the upper part of Daf Mem Amud Aleph, we have the case of the slave that dons tefillin in front of his master. The Gemara. Omar Rabbi Zeiro, Omar Rabbi Chanina, Omar Ravashi, Omar Rabbi. Eved Shenosa Es Bas Chorin Bifnei Rabo. A slave that marries a full Jewess, a regular Jewess, in front of his master. Yetze Lecherus. He goes free. We're going to view him as a freed slave. Freed slave means a regular, he becomes a regular Jew. Rashi on the top says, Yetze Lecherus, di lav de shachre, if he hadn't been freed, if this master had not freed him, lo avishovik le mitzvah bashor, and the master would not have allowed the slave to marry a regular Jewish woman. That's a clear sin. It's forbidden for a bas Yisrael, a bashorin, chor means a free woman, means a bas Yisrael, a regular Jewish woman, to marry a slave. So, the slave is marrying her in front of his master. It must be that the master had set him free. Omar le Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says to Rabbi Zeira, he says, Kol kach yesh biyodcha v'ani shone, you have so much in the name of Rabbi, and I have something quite different. Namely, that she wouldn't be considered married. It says in the following source, HaKosef Shtayr is in L'Shivchoso. One who writes a marital contract. In other words, Shtayr is in a shtar in which it says, Harei At Mekudeshes Li. You are married unto me. An owner of a bondmaid writes a marriage document, in fact, marries his bondmaid. Rabbi Meir Meir Mekudeshes V'chachom Emom Remeinu Mekudeshes. And we dashed underline Eina Mekudeshes because this is really the point we want to focus on. A marriage between the master and the bondmaid doesn't take hold. There's nothing there. So how can you say in the name of Rebbe that a slave that marries a Bas Chorin, it's a recognized marriage? The Gemara answers, Kida Omar Rabo Bar Rav Shilo. As Rabo says later on, Kisharabo Hiniach Lo Tfilin. That's hard to understand right now because we didn't see the source for that. It's quoted later on. It's where the master is proactive. The master puts tfilin on his slave. That indicates that the master must have freed his slave beforehand. Hochanami Kisharaboi Hesio Isha. That which Rebbe said, that the slave goes free, it's where the master married his slave to this free woman. And where the master is active in a proactive fashion, so we say that the master must have freed him ahead of time, because otherwise he wouldn't allow a sin to take place through him. The Gemara asks, Umi iko midi de la avde lo meved le yisura viyu avad yisura? Is it possible? Is there such a thing as a, when it comes to his slave and the sins that would be violated by the slave, so the master is very concerned. But when it comes to himself, well, he would go ahead and sin. That would be what we saw before of a master who tried to marry his bondmaid. The Chacham said there's no marriage. That's a sinful relationship. There's no bond formed. Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. The machlokis we saw above between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim is not so simple. In other words, it's not as superficial as, oh, a master went ahead and tried to do a sinful marriage with his bondmaid. But rather, the Omar law. The case involves the master saying, Tzi'i bo v'izkachi bo. He presented one document, and the one document was to serve a dual purpose. It was going to serve as a release from servitude and at the same time enabling her to marry him. Just to back up for a moment, Rashi, Tzi'i bo, we look at Rashi together. Tzi'i bo on the second narrow line, Tzi'i bo v'izkachi bo klomar. I di omar hiskachi bo greida. If a master approached his bondmaid and said to her, take this document through which you are marrying me. Well, vaday shichru meikor, that's a clear indication that he must have set her free prior. Aval hashta, but now, in the source where Rabbi Meir Lachomer are arguing, diomar la tzi boi v'skachi bo, where he says you go free with this, and also be married unto me, and this will serve both as your shtar shichur and your shtar erisin, your freedom and your marriage to me. Goli milse delo shichur elabahai. That reveals to us that he had not set her free beforehand. So in a case where a master approaches his bondmaid and says, I want to marry you with this marriage contract with the shtar erisin, that would, as we said, be an indication he must have freed her beforehand. Just like we said with regard to the slave being married by his master, the master must have set him free beforehand, hence it's a legitimate marriage. What happens in a case where it's clear that the master had not set her free beforehand, but rather the freedom and the marriage would be simultaneous? So regarding this, we continue in the Gemara. Rabbi Meir Sovar Yesh Beloshna Zeloshin Shichur. By saying Tzi Bo Vizkachi Bo, you have a tangible expression of release, of freedom. Rabbanan Savri Ein Beloshin Hazel Loshin Shichur. There is not an indication in this of release. And hence the Rabbanan said, in this case, you have an ineffective release, and that's why Eino Mekudeshes, the master who's a regular Jew, cannot be viewed as married to a bondmaid. Rashi, Rabbi Meir Sovar, Yesh Beloshen Hare At Mekudeshes Li, if a contract, a document, in which that expression appeared, Hare At Mekudeshes Li, as we saw in Rashi on the third line from the top, that the Shtar Erisin had within it that expression. What Rashi, by the way, is clarifying is that the Tzi'i Bo Vizkachi Bo wasn't the actual case, but that's what we are describing. A case of Hare At Mekudeshes Li. Does that accomplish both Tzi'i bo v'izkachi bo? Loshon shichur, the avochikom have ru'uyo l'izkadish li bo, v'izkachi bo. Loshon shichur means an expression of freedom. How is there an expression of freedom in this term, hare'at mekudeshesli? It's in effect saying you become fit to marry me. How does a bondmaid become fit to marry me? By her being freed. It's interesting that here we don't introduce the description of Hare'at Mekudeshesli, that you should be like the Am Kadosh, which we saw in our previous Shi'urim. But nevertheless, this is the understanding of Hare'at Mekudeshesli. You should become fit to marry me. That would be the expression of freedom. And Vehiskat Shibo, be married unto me. So both would be accomplished at once. Rabbi Meir says, yes, you can imply, you can infer both expressions in that phrase. Hare at mikudeshes li. The Rabbanan say no. You don't see in there an expression of freedom. Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Eved Shiniach Tfilin Bifnei Rabo, Yetzei Lecherus, a servant that dons tefillin in front of his master, the servant goes free. Meisvei. Rashi, by the way, points out that tefillin wearing is not something that a servant would ordinarily do as a servant. It's a positive command that has a time restriction to it. In other words, tefillin are worn only by day. They're not worn at night. So there's a time restriction element to it. That's called a mitzvah saseh shazman groma, a positive command that's time-bound, just like women are exempt from such commandments, such mitzvahs, so too slaves are exempt from them. Well, if you see a slave putting on tefillin in front of his master, that indicates that the slave is free, and hence a full-fledged Jew and obligated in tefillin. We raise an objection. Meisvei, lovo himenu rabo. A slave who borrowed money from his master, o shaso rabo apotropis, or a slave that was appointed an executor over his finances, o shiniach tefillin bifnei rabo. And this, of course, is what we want to emphasize, and we do so with our markings. We dashed underline these expressions. O shikora alo kora shloshim psukim beis hakneset bifnei rabo, or the slave read three verses from a Torah in a synagogue. Hareza lo yotza lecherus, or hareza lo yetze lecherus. He does not go free. Well, you see, obviously, the question on what Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said. He claimed that the donning of tefillin by the slave in front of the master is a sign of freedom. Here we see not so. Omar rabo bar rav shilo kishiniach kisherabo hiniach lo tefillin. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's ruling was not just that the slave put tefillin on in front of his master, but rather the master took a proactive role in putting the tefillin on the slave. Oh, if the master is putting tefillin on the slave, that's a sure sign that the master must have freed him prior to this. And hence, Yetze Lecherus. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.